Siren Radio.
Sorry, just having 40 winks there. Okay, it is time to effectively open up the connections between Gibraltar and Los Angeles. Of course, Gabriella, it was only a matter of 14 days ago, you were almost within touching distance of Phil Linus because you were in Vegas, Phil was in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, the great magic could have happened.
I
know, exactly. And I was very impressed by the fact that you're all set to connect with us live from a club in Vegas at midnight Vegas time. But you, ever the consummate professional, said you could hardly hear anything, let alone a telephone link. So we texted each other. That's wonderful. So there we are. I see Phil.
Yeah, I don't think it was very wise to do that.
Oh, yeah, the midweek drivettes continue to get ever closer in terms of this global exploration that we call the morning edition.
We still stay in separate cities, though. We don't get together because if we spread out, we can do more damage that way.
Very, very true. Okay, well, as we begin to just tease ahead to the voyages.
You know, Alex, the last time I was in Las Vegas was the day of the mass shooting there.
Yes.
And
oh, wow.
Then, and this is the first time I think I've spoken about Las Vegas since then. And the news is about another shooting in Bakersfield.
Yeah,
welcome to the west of the United States. Hey, fun fact about Bakersfield, and maybe it explains the rage. There are no bakers and there are no fields in Bakersfield. It's absolutely true.
No. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, it's just outrageous.
Also, it's much the same way how fun facts are neither fun nor really facts.
Well, in terms, let's just share one with you. As we started off the program before the news, 2018, the 250th anniversary of the Endeavour voyage. James Cook, of course, who voyaged both the Arctic and the Antarctic, charted the entirety of the Northwest Pacific across the Bering Strait and Alaska, and indeed opened the way for some of the most famous names of polar exploration. And actually, in terms of a tease ahead, in October, as part of the Discover Middlesbrough Festival, I shall be producing and presenting a special evening in which we compare and contrast Captain James Cook with Bark Endeavour with James T. Kirk from USS Enterprise. A comparison between Cook and Kirk. Who's going to win? I just roll that out there. Just a tease ahead from that. Cook versus Kirk. That's my thought. But I know what you're waiting for. It's the weather. And the weather from Los Angeles and indeed from Gibraltar for Lincoln. Who wishes to go first? Anybody dibs the first sort of routine for that? I mean, what do you say, Gabriella?
I don't mind.
Okay, Gabriella's open. Phil, are you happy to take this connection as it's your first morning edition for quite some time?
Oh, you want me to go first?
I think so.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was just thinking about the fact that my closest liquor store is actually Captain Cork.
Whoa.
So you could throw that into the mix, too.
Words.
All right. You know what? I think I'm going to start with the Fahrenheit. I'm going to start with what looks like it's 50 degrees Fahrenheit there in Lincoln with a high of 64, because I know that you have a lot of American listeners through the magic of the internet, and they won't understand what I mean when the Celsius high today is... I can't do the conversion. It's something much less than that. So I'll let Gabriella explain what it will be in Celsius today. But it looks like a lovely, lovely autumnal day there in Lincoln.
Gabriella, do you concur?
Okay. I will give the Celsius edition. I've got highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, and it will be... a day of sunny intervals and moderate breeze.
Live
so nice
from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And as fans of the Midweek Drive Evening Edition are concerned on Wednesdays, and will already have noted, yesterday, being Phil Linus was indeed Tiffany Freeman. So that's nice. You see, it's good sort of solid things put together, I feel, which was nice. And
Has Tiffany graduated?
She did.
Four years ago.
That's right. It's been a meal.
But I mean, there's not going to be any more schooling, because I do think... The title being Phil Linus certainly sounds like the thesis for a postgraduate degree.
Well, we'll suggest that. And bearing in mind that Turnabout is fair play, and we had Tiffany comment on Gabriella's ident and jingle, clearly we needed to actually reciprocate. So this is what, after 4 years of work and constant planning and stress and various other things and wondering, should we ask Lily Holliman to voice this? Should we ask Phil Leonis to voice this? No, in the end, we went for a producer of a film that's being made in Romania, and he came up with...
Tiffany Freeman, the cultural correspondent Leicester and the Midweek Drive has needed since Richard III arrived in town.
It's a car parking thing.
One.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
just working on that. Okay. She seemed to be quite happy with that. We did a number of sort of takes on the whole system, but so it goes. I mean, Phil is so busy with his wedding preparations now, I just didn't have the heart to say, Phil, could you do some voiceovers for us? That, of course, being Phil Leonis, because he's 20 hours. He's been working 20 hours nonstop, and here he is just after midnight.
Though not entirely 20 hours nonstop on the wedding. I mean, I do want to let people know I am available for gainful employment. It's not, I'm not withdrawing from the world altogether for the 6 months leading up to the wedding.
See, I don't know about these things, you see, as a bachelor. I mean, who knows what could, I mean, I would have thought, it's, as you say, 6 months could be just constant full-on focus.
But, you know, other people apparently picked up what you dropped, which is asking me for voiceover work, and this is still very hush-hush, but apparently... A series, an audio comedy series set in a certain White House inhabited by a current president of the United States, that I did a voice in. It looks like that's going to get picked up as a series by Audible. So that's kind of a big deal, but that's just between us. Please don't let that go out over the
absolutely. It's you know, and okay. And we can trust our friendly neighborhood listener to actually ensure there'll be you know, from that point of view, we don't know what's going to happen. But good news, and we haven't dropped you, Phil. It's just obviously we're more than happy for you to be part of the whole sort of system. It's just, you know, we're working through that process anyway. Gabriella, anything you'd like to share with Phil, or any questions you'd like to put to Phil Leonis about life, the universe, or indeed just anything at this particular stage in time?
I have a wedding question.
Oh.
Will Fuzz Aldrin be the flower girl?
Nice.
Oh, now that is... I was thinking ring bearer, actually. But she does need to be a part of this. We're having a morning wedding and then an afternoon reception and then nighttime cocktail soiree. So it's a long, long day and a long weekend. And everyone I would have take care of Fuzz is going to be at the wedding. So I feel like she needs to be there, and the people, give the people what they want. That is a time and true tradition in show business. So we will take it under advisement, and I'll let you know.
Now, you see, that just kicks into another whole aspect, Gabriella, because just when I was sort of thinking, no, I can't possibly come, but the fact that Fuzz Aldrin could be there as the flower girl or the ring bearer from that, in a feline sense, I now have to think, oh, maybe I should go after, I don't, oh, it's just one challenge after the other, really, just never mind. In case you're wondering, Ben Lewis, who was celebrating his birthday yesterday, will be back with us next week. Yay, Ben! It's a huge, happy, hearty hello and congratulations to, of course, are two folk who've joined you, Gabriella, in the grand world of being graduates of the University of Lincoln. It finally happened yesterday for both Lauren Wood and, of course, Tessa Snart. So yes, they've officially got their stuff. Exactly, great stuff.
I've seen Tessa's graduation pictures actually.
Yeah, they were. Oh, they're crazy.
I mean,
the whole Snart family were just—it was like, it's unbelievable. It's like being surrounded by familial paparazzi around the whole. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary. In addition to that, obviously, hats off to Hannah Brown, who I didn't catch yesterday, but she's doing wonderful well as well. So other stuff. Okay, Phil. Last two questions, please, for Gabriella before she goes off to the Gibraltar Chronicle to deal with the magical world of that, and in fact the fact that government has put plans together to have a secure detention centre for children in Gibraltar. Is that right? I mean, do you just lock children away in Gibraltar until they actually reach 18?
Before they got into trouble in the courts, they got sent to prison.
Fine.
So at age 12 to 13,
Yeah, well.
So now it's we're putting them in detention centre, yeah, which is a lot better than sticking them in prison.
Precisely. I mean, maybe you could have a child catcher at Black Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Put them in prison, but obviously in a different, you know, not with the
a different environment. Different environment, exactly.
Different area, but it still nonetheless was prison.
Mm.
So I think it's just been something that's needed.
Serious topic, but it does tie in with a question I'm going to put to Phil Leonis in a few moments. It's a musical question, which for me is actually critical to the future of humanity as we know it. But that's by the by. Phil, those last two questions need to be asked.
Yes, that's really serious. I'm suddenly, it became a somber occasion. Gabriella, have you enjoyed your all too brief appearance with us here on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I have. Thank you, I have.
And can I look forward to hearing your voice next week when I return?
Yep, for sure. Same time next week.
Whoa, that's 168 hours from now and counting, of course. As Gabriella heads off, the question, of course, being which classic motion picture does this serve as the introductory titles to? And why is it, major clue coming up for you here, Phil, that one day I know you're going to do a single tracking shot which is just as wonderful as the one that opens this particular movie?
Touch of Evil.
Oh, please. Honestly, we're all set and ready to go, and then suddenly... Some days I feel I could just listen to the Henry Mancini Orchestra all day long producing their magnificent stuff. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Undoubtedly it is. Oh, yes.
Now, clearly you might not have been tuned into the introduction to that in which Phil Linners blurted out the response, but your initial thought was, is that a Bond score?
Well, that's what I heard just for a second. It did sound. It had that sort of resonance. But...
So any ideas in terms of what classic motion picture this comes from? I fear I might have given it away too much with respect to Phil Leonis with a directorial comment, actually. But no.
I mean, firstly, the word classic is one of the greatly misused terms. Not as bad as celebrity or national treasure, but any movie that's over a certain vintage can you still want to claim the sobriquet classic.
Well, I use that to define Taras Bulba, of course, as you know, which I think was
mighty with
Tony Curtis and Yul Brynner. I mean, that
Christine Kaufman.
Yeah, that to me is many ways the ultimate gold standard when you talk about classics. But Phil, would you like to put Richard and possibly the listener out of any kind of doubt whatsoever when I actually mentioned that long tracking shot, which I know one day you're going to get?
Oh, this is Orson Welles, is it?
Yes, it's Touch of Evil.
Yes. The long tracking shot. When you mentioned that, it wasn't going to be it. Yes, I did get it.
Well, I blurted it out because I was so excited. I mean, I couldn't believe that you had it all racked up and ready to go, Richard. Alex, it's one of the first soundtrack albums on vinyl that I ever bought when I was a kid. The Henry Mancini soundtrack to Touch of Evil.
Exactly.
And isn't it interesting that apparently it was Charlton Heston who suggested Orson Welles for that role? Am I correct?
You're absolutely right, because...
Orson Welles was hired to play the part. Charlton Heston manipulated the studio into making Orson Welles direct. It's a rather wonderful, famous story. They had only hired Orson Welles to act because no studio would touch Welles as a director again. And so when Heston went into the studio head's office, he said, "Get Welles on the phone. I'm so excited to be acting with him. Put him on the phone. Put him on speakerphone." So Orson Welles answered the call. He's on speakerphone. Charlton Heston, one of the biggest stars under contract at the studio, is there with the studio head. And Charlton Heston says loud for everyone to hear, "Orson Welles, I am so excited to be acting in a movie you are directing." And then Heston walked out, and quickly they had to offer a contract to Orson Welles.
Oh, I've got to find out, incidentally, why Alex chose to torment my memory.
Richard.
When you mentioned Taras Bulba, for some weird reason, kept flashing into my mind. Yes. I have Yul Brynner pointing a pistol.
My son,
at
I, gave you,
Curtis,
exactly.
I gave
you
life.
It
is for me to take it.
Jeez.
Good God.
It's a goosebump moment equivalent to, as I was saying with Arthur Weingarten yesterday, the return of the son in Shenandoah with Jimmy Stewart. These are messages that, you know, in many ways, you know, I like to just roll out the whole system, and I think it's important to get some initial feedback on that perspective.
Anyway. Well, you'll certainly, I mean, for the King and I, absolutely, but there's no question, Tarvis, I rather enjoyed Tarvis Bulber 150 years ago or whenever I saw it. I was just amazed, as you mentioned.
I'm sure it's just waiting, together with Touch of Evil, to serve as the basis for the return of the podcast series where we comment on what great movies actually resonate with us today. Isn't that right, Phil Linus?
Yes, I can't believe it's been so long since we've done that.
I mean,
those podcasts are now vintage and classic and national treasures in their own right.
Well, I've got another batch sorted out, and now that you've actually said that, no, you're not completely locked into wedding planning for the next 6 months, we might actually sort of throw a few things out at you. Meanwhile, if we go to the miseducation of Cameron Post, have you seen it, Phil Linus?
I have neither seen it nor heard of it.
Whoa!
It's interesting that I'm surprised. It's Anglo-American and directed by Desiree Akhavan, based on a novel by Emily Danforth, set in 1993, and Cameron, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, is caught with another girl in the back seat of a car on prom night, horrified. Response she's sent to a gay conversion center. This is run by Dr. Lydia Marsh, played by Jennifer Ely, who's, I think, pretty good, known to audiences here for her role in Pride and Prejudice. Tough, ruthless, uncompromising, running God's Promise Christian Center, with her brother, the Reverend Rick John Gallagher Jr., plays him, who has gone through the same sex conversion therapy and supposedly based on penitence, how same-sex attraction is an evil in the sight of the Lord, so they try and cure it. In fact, of course, it is abuse. And Cameron teams up with Adam, played by Forrest Goodluck, and Jane Fonda. I mean, this is becoming, there was a character in a movie recently called Morgan Freeman, a character, Sasha Lane, who I adored in American Honey, a wonderful movie, which I'm hopeful both saw and absolutely loved as I did. She teams up with them. and they're somewhat rebellious. Adam is uncertain about his sexuality, that this is only fleetingly dealt with, and they defy the authorities. And we have, I mean, this is interesting, this is the third film in about a month and a half that has dealt with a malicious, in this case fictitious, in the case of apostasy and the Children Act, Jehovah's Witnesses, an evil form of power or cult trying to change you psychologically. And here you have same-sex conversion, aversion therapy. It's shown to be absolutely evil. The problem with the movie, I enjoyed the movie. I thought Chloe Grace Moretz was extremely good. I thought that visually it was unobtrusive, but very apt. I liked its music. It did have one difficulty. It's had some rave reviews, which I'm surprised you haven't heard of it, because its posters boast a whole series of 4 and 5 stars, but the characters do lack a certain depth. It's not funny enough to be a satire. There are a certain number of laughs, but not that many. And though there is a shock moment, it isn't really dramatic enough to be that involving. I mean, I did enjoy it. I mean, one remembers Love, Simon, of course, which broke down taboos about gayness in college. And there is no question that this movie, its heart is absolutely in the right place. But I did feel a little left out. You felt that the movie could perhaps have been a bit longer, but we could have got to know the characters a bit more. We certainly don't get to know Adam and Jane as much as we should. Chloe Grace Moretz gives a very good performance. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. As I say, the message is obvious. It's not subtle, particularly in that respect. I mean, it was what I would call enjoyable. I wouldn't go overboard about it.
Would you have awarded it the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival, Richard?
Which is, this is the thing. It did very, very well. And some reviewers, The Guardian gave it 5 stars, for example. Now, that's, in my view, over the top, because you needed to develop these characters and get to know them a bit better. You needed a movie that perhaps was a bit longer or better scripted, and you needed, if it was going to be a total satire, you need far, far more laughs, and you needed a different type of script. On the other hand, what I think it was going towards was something that was going to be gut-wrenchingly dramatic because of the one shock that we do have in the movie, and it certainly has only one, and it doesn't particularly score on that. So, you know, I'm in the 3-star, 3.5-star area. I did enjoy it, and I thought, as I say, Chloe Grace Moretz was pretty good. But I'm not recommending it especially, because you would...
Phil, I think you're dunning Richard, you're dunning with faint praise now. Phil, does that appeal to you?
Well, I mean, Chloe Grace Moretz, let's make no mistake about it, she's a national treasure. Sundance has had a spotty record over these past few years with their winning films not actually landing, firmly once released to the marketplace. There seems to be a bit of a disconnect at this point in time. I loved American Honey. I have yet to catch up with Love, Simon. I wish there were more movies like American Honey that depict the so many aspects of our society that do not get stories told about them. I'm looking forward to catching up with Love, Simon. I almost misspoke when I said that I hadn't heard of Miseducation, though technically it is true. This is the first time I've ever heard anyone speak about it. But I realized once you were talking about it that this is a film for which the thumbnail poster keeps showing up in my news feed as a film I might enjoy.
You will enjoy it. But I'm not so much damning with faint praises that it could have been really powerful, or it could have been had a script that really crackled. But yeah, I did enjoy it.
Well, you mentioned its heart in the right place. That is a start, but it also helps to have your head on right to when structuring a narrative.
Moving on, Richard, a few days ago, you put in your particular social media an image of yourself playing, I believe, table tennis in a certain part of London. Is that not the case?
Well, I plead guilty.
Oh. Well, interesting fact here, a fun fact, one might say, and you can confirm this with Ben Lewis when he's with you next week, because he was actually in an office literally just behind you, and you were so close to meeting Ben Lewis in person, you'll actually connect with him next week. So there we are. He just wanted to share that with me, so there we are.
Oh, goodness
so,
me. Yeah, well, just I can see I'm being tracked, yeah.
Always important. Meanwhile, on a hot night in Kingston, Jamaica in 1973, a certain Jerry Dredd stopped the music at an outdoor party to encourage a truce between warring gangs. Is this Idris Elba's Orson Welles moment, or not quite?
Well, I'm afraid not quite. Yes, it does indeed begin in Kingston in the 70s, and indeed we have a young Jamaican known as Dee, played by Amal Amin, and throughout this movie he's haunted by the murder during his childhood of his older brother Jerry, played by Evaldo Creary, during a peace rally in 1973. I mean, it's obviously... this idea is possibly the Bob Marley, the famous Bob Marley rally, and in Jamaica, the movie, see, it's an extremely good start. You've got the colors, you've got the vibrance, and you've got Idris Elba directing with some panache. And Dee grows up under the influence of gangster and music producer King Fox, played by Shelton Shepherd. Fox sends him to London, where he reconnects with his childhood sweetheart Yvonne. Chantal Jackson plays her and his daughter, who he'd lost touch with. But it sets him also on a path to avenge his brother when he finds the gangster who killed him, and into conflict with the ruthless Rico, played by Stephen Graham. One of the problems with this movie is that when it leaves Jamaica, it becomes very lackluster. And for a film of the sort, you have to get involved with the characters. Initially, I thought it was very promising. And you've got a voiceover narrator, you've got a narrator, you've got characters, however, that aren't developed. You have scenes that...
Richard, don't worry. I mean, every so often on Chill Pack Hollywood, Dean Haglund provides noises off. Phil is kindly actually doing that today. So it's all very good. He's shutting things down here, opening things up there. He has been working for over 20 and a half hours.
Well, I have to also mention to him that if he sees Yardi, and I know that this is heretical, I do find difficulty. I have a difficulty with American accents sometimes if they are,
it's the mumbles.
For me, impenetrable. I mean, Miami Vice was a priceless
example. Oh, come now.
No, I couldn't understand most of what was said. And I have to...
That was just Colin Farrell. He's Irish. I expect no more.
I knew Farrell and Fox, as I remember, and also when it comes to Sweet 16, Alex is going to have a laugh at me because this was a Ken Loach movie, and this was an experience that I've never had before in a preview theatre. Well, that we had subtitles for the first 20 minutes and not for the rest of it, which I desperately needed.
Richard, it was all be laughing with, not laughing at. Always laughing with, not laughing at. According to Jordan Hoffman, despite flashes of brilliance, the crime drama, Yardi, which is what we're talking about, set in Jamaica and the UK, has a plodding narrative and lacks emotional resonance.
It does, I'm afraid, because when you're not interested in the plot, it doesn't much matter what the characters get up to. Yeah.
Well, there we have it, Phil Leonis. Yardi, is it one for you?
Look, I'm still stunned that the biggest complaint Richard has about Miami Vice was the American accents. I mean, I feel like that is a really low on the list of complaints that I have about that film. But no, Yardi does not seem like one that needs to get to the top of my queue.
Well,
I'm afraid. No, regarding Miami Vice, it was just one of those... it's just that when I can't understand what's being said, it's perfectly true that it may not be worth understanding.
Could be a blessing in disguise, exactly. And there was I thinking I could actually classify the movie version of Miami Vice with Touch of Evil as being equally wonderful in their own way.
And may I also ask, I know this is heretical because it's a movie I'll be talking about next week, but hopefully Phil will be joining us then, but I just having seen, and I thought it was a wicked experience, American Animals, I'd just love to get his take on it.
Well, then I guess I'd better see it. This is another one that I have been so busy, and this is another one that has been on my list to see for some time.
Oh, it certainly made an impression on me. I will say that. Really, it did. Oh, dear, yes. We'll leave the review for next week, but it would be wonderful if you could join us, and then we could discuss. I mean, there are obvious aspects of heist movies that this plays along with, and I have to say, I my enjoyment...
You're almost losing words, Richard. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Well, having just seen it and having very much enjoyed it, I would love Phil's take on a movie that, if you wished to be ruthless, no doubt you could rip it to bits from an ethical standpoint, but it would be lovely next week to talk about something we'd both seen.
Well, there you have it. You've teased ahead, and in a recent survey from the British Heart Foundation, which we'll be speaking about in a few moments from now, British folk are apparently a lot warmer at heart than the standoffish British stereotype might suggest. Apparently, Richard, the attributes most people would like to be remembered for most are kindness and humour.
Yes, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
We're conscious as a nation of the legacy we're leaving, and the majority of Britons want to be remembered for their kindness, with wealth and professional achievements seen as less important. Only half of us want to be remembered for our kindness above all else. I'm sure the same exists in the White House at this very moment in time.
Heaven forbid, a topic like that is so incendiary, I don't know how Phil will be able to cope with it.
because he can, and he's just going to ask, he's going to respond now to your good self, Richard, popping those last two questions to Phil Dearness.
I must just mention the Princess of Wales.
Of course.
She quoted a little poem which talked about something kind being all the sad world needs. Very moving.
Wow.
Memory.
I'm getting goosebumps and filling up at this moment. But Richard, I'm awarding you the role of popping those last two questions to Phil Learness, because, as you say, he's now been working for over 20 hours and 42 minutes, virtually non-stop.
Well, good heavens, Phil, I'm impressed. Have you enjoyed your conversation with us today?
I have missed you, Richard, and it has been exceptional to be with you again.
May I say likewise, and will you, I hope you will be joining us next week.
I am right now arranging plans to view American Animals so that I can join you fully prepared next week.
And The Little Stranger is the other film.
Whoa.
Precisely.
It's just wonderful. Not to be confused with Little Prince, of course. Now, there's a wonderful movie. Richard, it's been okay with you?
Absolutely.
See you next week.
Indeed. And I'll be back from Vienna.
And proving that even in his 70s, he's still got that magic from his latest album, Egypt Station, it's Sir Paul McCartney.
I sat around all day. I used to get stoned. I like to get wasted. But these days I don't, 'cause I'm happy with you. I got lots of good things to do. Oh yeah. I walked around angry. I used to feel bad. But nowadays my day to be sad, 'cause I'm happy with you. I got lots of good things to do. I don't, 'cause I'm happy. see an ice cold running stream rushing down the mountain, hear a newborn baby lamb calling for its mother, watching reunited friends loving one another. I sat around all day, I like to get stoned, I used to get wasted, but these days I don't, cause I'm happy with you. I got lots of good things to do.
Clock on Siren Radio. Happy with you, Paul McCartney. Are you happy with Paul McCartney, Ian Lennox?
Yes, he's lived a lovely life in many ways, hasn't he?
Well, and that's
what he wanted to do most of his life.
And that's his latest album, of course, recently released, of course, Egypt Station. Happy with you. Still turning out classics, much as you do with the narrative prose. It's wonderful. Somebody who possibly isn't quite happy is the statistic that emerges from, indeed, the various stats boys of the Premier League that actually points out that Newcastle United have only strung 10 or more passes together consecutively on 6 occasions this season, which is the second lowest after Cardiff. And in addition to that, they've only made a tackle or interception after the opposition have put together an average of 18.7 passes. That's obviously not good, because it's only Cardiff who are actually more challenged than that. But you take on Arsenal, so all is not yet lost, is it, Ian?
Well, one hopes not.
Exactly. Did you? I mean, yeah, it's not the number of statistics that you got there in terms of stringing 10 or more passes together. That, you know,
does anybody else talk about this except statisticians? I mean, what? I've been in football for 60 years. I've never heard anybody say, "Oh, we only put 3 passes together and all that." We just don't.
There we are. Apparently,
I think statistics are a means by which people who know nothing about football can have a conversation.
Absolutely, it's very true. A little call there, I think, beginning to come in for our next feature. We're talking about with Fee Riley from the British Heart Foundation, who will be sharing with us the positive views that actually Britons as a nation, we'd like to be more remembered for kindness than anything else. What would you like to be remembered for, Ian, when in 40 years from now you finally pass into Heaven FM?
Being a decent dad, I think.
I think that's good. Kind, generous, funny. What do you want your children, grandchildren, the people in your life to remember for? Being remembered in a positive light is a great accomplishment. But what lasting legacy would you like to leave behind? So it works on that basis. And it all ties in with the British Heart Foundation, which is wonderful. Little tease ahead. 250 years ago, do you know what was actually happening in great exploration terms?
250 years, that would be what? Oh dear! Can you give me a date?
So? Yeah, we're talking in the 18th century, obviously. So the end of the 18th century.
It wouldn't be. It's too early for the French Revolution.
Yes, just a touch, exactly. If it helps, it's been commemorated by the National Maritime Museum.
Something to do with clocks and things.
Not quite, but they did need clocks, and it features a
North... Well, it's compasses and navigation.
Well, again, the critical part of this whole system, but it featured a northeast lad, although certainly he would
Captain
have...
Cook.
Exactly. 250 years ago, the Endeavour set sail.
Right. Yeah. Now, I did a series of features on... some features on Captain Cook. Went to... the place where he was an apprentice.
Yes.
Went and stood in the room where he was.
Great Ayton, Whitby, all of those fantastic northern base.
Yes.
It's genius stuff. And as the Maritime Museum is actually all about this grand new £12.6 million expansion, which will also see an additional 1,000 objects on display. And galleries will feature on polar worlds, the Pacific encounters, the Tudor and Stuart seafarers and sea things. It's amazing. It will be.
I think it was a great map drawer. I think he drew the first really definable map of Australia. Which is extraordinarily accurate considering the instruments he had at
exactly.
his disposal.
And indeed, we'll be talking about that with Claire Warrior, which I think is right.
Oh.
Wonderful. Claire Warrior, Senior Exhibitions Curator.
I'm beginning to sound as though I know what I'm talking about.
You do, Ian. If not, you say
I better shut up.
you say it with confidence, which is very important, as many politicians will actually say.
Yes.
That's great. Claire Warrior, in addition to being Senior Exhibitions Curator at the National Maritime Museum, also recently went to the Canadian Arctic for the first time, which enabled her to connect the stories in the new gallery with her own experiences. So there you go.
Is that the Northwest Passage?
Yes.
Yes.
Just goes to show you, see, that whenever you're worried about your team not tackling enough or having sufficient consecutive passes, there's always the conquering of the Northwest Passage to actually work through that process.
Right. I've stood, as you know, I go to Canada frequently.
Yes.
Or have been, anyway. And I went to a place called Banff, which is near the Rockies, or on the Rockies, really. And I stood there on the top of this mountain and they wondered how the heck the pioneers had got across this river in the mountains. And basically what happened was they knew through Cook's exploration that there was land over the Rockies, because he discovered the Northwest. He'd gone right out of the coastline. So what they did was they sent scouts across and eventually found a way through the Rockies. But it was all because they used the knowledge that Cook had given them that they were able to do it.
Extraordinary. I mean, I know you've written sort of, well, actually, you're partly historic, and 20th century novels. Have I intended to go further back in your writing and actually produce a novel from, indeed, the 17th century or 16th century? Or
I once tried to write, or thought about writing, a novel set in the Roman Republic times, because it's obviously a great tapestry for adventure stories and stuff. But it became apparent to me immediately, almost immediately anyway, that I just couldn't do it. I didn't know enough about the people, and never would, because I had no feeling for the. I couldn't imagine the way they thought, because they had no Christian base of thinking. They had a different thought about death,
but Ian,
about life.
Ian, arguably with Hadrian, they were the first Geordies.
Yes.
I mean, surely...
Not as we know them, though.
Yes. Listen, people say
they never hated Sunderland to start with.
In 2,000 years from now, people might say the same from a historical perspective about Mike Ashley. There we are. He's got your Debenhams, he's got your Sports Direct, he's got your House of Fraser, he's got your Newcastle United. Let's just get it all in order. Genius.
There's many a time, Alex, and our conversations I wish I had what he had for breakfast.
The oxygen of life, that's the important thing. Still to come, as we mentioned, we'll be speaking to the British Heart Foundation's very own Fee Riley, and then Ellie Cannon will be talking about the beneficial effects of Lego play. Were you a Lego child, Ian?
No, I wasn't. But my eldest daughter is a devotee. She's now 45. And I don't know if you saw my Facebook entry. She ran the Great North Run.
Yes.
And came, I think, as 51st fastest woman.
I'm pleased you mentioned that. Deserves hot, solid congratulations. And consider a virtual round of applause duly delivered.
There's a picture of her being congratulated by Brendan Foster.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, he was a Sunderland supporter as well, I believe. So
I'm not sure, was he?
Well, and Gateshead. I mean, do you speak about Gateshead?
Well, Gateshead's near Newcastle.
This is true. This is very true. Yeah, who knows?
But he might have been.
You know, these are the kind of imponderables that actually make these telephonic links just that wee bit more important to work through. So, key things from that point of view. And also, Alan Williams, Chef Alan Williams, will be talking about challenges that are being faced by processed foods in our diet. There's too much of it. People are taking too much processed food. It's not good for us. We'll find out about that in the second part of the programme. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, I have.
So next week, when we will be celebrating the return of Ben Lewis, can I inform Ben Lewis that actually it's good news, because finally, after a gap of well over a year, we will be able to reunite the passion for Brighton, Hove Albion and Newcastle United one glorious 10 or 15 minute connection.
Yes, I look forward to that.
Fantastic.
I do admire Brighton, I think.
Chris Hughton, of course, he could have still been manager at the Toon, but he was let go. There you go. Yes, hungry for kindness. That's the important thing. Kindness and humour, as we've been alluding to other programmes so far. Those are the kind of things that the British folk would like to be remembered for, which is great stuff. And a survey from the British Heart Foundation, which also marks the start of the Willpower campaign. And to talk about that and more, it's a spokesperson from the British Heart Foundation, the wonderful Fee Riley. Good morning, Fee.
Good morning.
So far our contributors, whether they be in Newcastle, Los Angeles or indeed London, have all pretty much agreed that actually kindness and humour, yeah, we'd like to be remembered for that perspective. So this is good news in an era where we might sort of think, well, if we listen to our politicians, we're all doomed.
I think it's brilliant news, and our survey was actually, it's really delightful to hear those results. People want to be remembered for their generosity, their humour, and actually being remembered for your wealth and achievements, it fell to the bottom of the pile. And the majority of us said that we want to cement this reputation right now and do more to help others.
Yeah, just 1 in 10 people actually want to be remembered for their work. Well, I suppose there is that line, whoever said on their final seconds in life, oh, I wish I'd spent more time at the office. Just a thought. In addition to that, the notion of people wanting to do more to help others, volunteering, giving to a charity or service they've benefited from, or indeed donating an organ, are all part of this legacy that's being left behind. So, Willpower, not a singer from the 1980s, or indeed various other bits and pieces, but this whole notion of leaving a gift in their will. This is something which the BHF obviously got actively behind. Would you like to share with us some of the thoughts about the Willpower campaign?
Absolutely. And the British Heart Foundation released these figures to mark this campaign to celebrate the power of gifts and wills. But what was really great was in the survey, a quarter of people told us that they'd want to use their will to improve the lives of others. And to encourage the public to consider leaving a gift in their will, we know that that's going to make a meaningful difference to the lives of 7 million people living with heart and circulatory disease in the UK. And more than a quarter of all of the cardiovascular research that we fund in the UK is actually funded by gifts and wills that the British Heart Foundation receives from all of our generous supporters. Fantastic amount of research that are down to these individuals being so generous.
It's also worth noting that an awful lot of the excellent work the British Heart Foundation actually does ties in with research and so on. So maybe we are finally going to be heading, maybe who knows, even in this century to a day where heart and circulatory diseases with heart disease, stroke, vascular dementia and other sort of aspects can actually be seen very much as a thing of the past.
That would be fantastic. But right now we do need to fund more because heart and circulatory diseases, they kill one person every 3 minutes at the moment. And that's just too much. And that's why gifts and wills are so powerful to us, because they will fund our research at half of the income that we receive. And they're going to help us research over 50 conditions, including heart disease, stroke and vascular dementia. And really, gifts and wills, if we didn't receive that income from those generous individuals, we wouldn't be able to do half the work that we do.
Were you surprised at all by the survey? Did you sort of think, oh, I thought people were a lot more hard-hearted, pun intended, than that?
Not surprised at all. I think Brits get a reputation for having a stiff upper lip, but we're warm and cuddly underneath, and actually I was delighted that the survey confirmed that. I think of everybody I know in my life, they're all warm individuals. They all give, they all care. And a survey just cemented that for me. So it was lovely to get those results in.
Which is splendid. So obviously, talked about the Willpower campaign. People want to find out further details. Where would you point them in the wonderful World Wide Web zone?
Yeah, so we've got a website address, which is bhf.org.uk/wills. You could also call one of our friendly team on 0800 277 0005. And actually, we offer a free guide that people can receive to find out more about leaving a gift in your will. It's not complicated to do. I think a lot of people think, oh, gosh, you know, making my will, it's one of those things that I put on a to-do list and I leave there for a couple of years. Actually, our guide is really helpful, really instructive, and will tell you about the free will scheme that we have so you can make your will for free. And it just takes all of the pain out of the process.
And as somebody who's worked in fundraising for over 12 years, Fee, I mean, already you've left a legacy, but what would you most like to be remembered for? I mean, not that you've obviously, this is not going to happen for about 80 years or so, but, you know, what would you like to be remembered for?
Definitely the impact that I can have in my role. I've actually updated my will recently and left a gift to my favourite charity, and I think that is going to have such an impact. It's a medical research charity. I'm not going to mention any names. But I'd really love to be remembered for that and the impact that I can have. I think that there's still so much more that we can do with 7 million families being affected by heart and circulatory conditions in the UK today. And just being able to, with the power of my will, take any of that pain away would be a wonderful thing to be remembered for.
See, that fear is probably why you were the best chair of Will Aid ever, and indeed the Committees for Remember a Charity's Campaign Council, and for the Institute of Fundraising's Fundraising's Legacy, and In Memory Giving, privilege to have actually worked with you. It's wonderful stuff then. But obviously you've been wearing your hat for spokesperson for the British Heart Foundation today. Another little task for you, actually, Fee. We're going to award you the role of music producer. Number of possible tunes to wrap up this little piece. We can offer you either Elvis Presley, Heartbreak Hotel, Kylie Minogue, Hand on Your Heart, Jason Donovan, Too Many Broken Hearts, or indeed With Every Heartbeat and Robin. You see what we did there in terms of the theme. So
I love the theme. I'm going to have to go Kylie. I was a Kylie fan all throughout my childhood. She's such a legend, so Kylie would be my choice.
Well,
thank you.
This is excellent stuff, because for a moment I thought, was she going to say Jason Donovan? No, it's so great stuff. Be fantastic chatting as ever. Take care. We'll speak again soon, no doubt. Thank Take
you.
Care.
Goodbye.
Put your hand on your heart and tell me that we're through.
As though Stock, Aitken, Waterman never been away. Actually, in some ways they haven't. Kylie Minogue, Hand on Your Heart on Siren Radio. We're approaching the news. Don't forget, after the news, Ellie Cannon talking about the beneficial effects of Lego play and competitive parenting. Always good. We'll also be finding out the ideal price to pay for allegedly our most prized possession. That will be the iPhone. That's coming from technical specialist and great author extraordinaire Evan Kyrios. So,
just stay tuned. I mean, there's literally no reason to go anywhere else than Lincoln's favourite Siren radio station as we head off to the news now with a little touch of Josh Turk.